We thank Elohim for this opportunity to gather before him at his appointed time. Happy Sabbath, brother. This is Brother Jackson. It is a privilege for all of us to be able to be gathered, to be involved in the matters of Elohim, our Creator. What an honor it is. What an honor it is to be called out of this world, as Yeshua prayed, that we should be living examples of righteousness, of purity, not in opposition of anything, but in unity and in sync with all that which is good, with the entire operation, with the entire work of the hands of Elohim, to work in harmony, in unity with all nature as he created, contradicting nothing. That is the wonderful beauty of the ways of Elohim. We are not the ones who contradict anything, those of us that are followers of the sovereign Yeshua, those who are living. But no, it is that which is sinful which contradicts. For Elohim created all things to be in peace and in harmony, to grow and to learn, not to sit and be stagnant or to regress and to misunderstand ancient ways to mean walking with animal skins on our bus. No, it's to progress and to grow in knowledge, in wisdom beyond the capacity of this quote unquote scientific community, where we understand the empirical things, where we understand how nature works, where we understand the currents of the waters, where we understand the currents of the wind, where we understand the ways of the sun, the ways of the stars, the way of the moon, where we are in harmony with all things, understanding all things perfectly. What a privilege it is. Yes, we're not there yet, because of the sins, because of the contradictions all around us and the contradictions in our own selves. But as we humble ourselves, all things will be made known to us. So brethren, let's rejoice in being what? As it is written, behold, what manner of love the Father has given unto us, that we should be the children of Elohim. That's why we're here, brethren. Rejoice. You are a child of Elohim. You are a child of the living Elohim, creator of heaven and earth and all things. And all things. And as his beloved son prayed, that we should be one even as he are one, even as he is one. Today we will continue with the book of Acts. As those of you that are familiar with the book know, much of the doctrine, much of the knowledge that Elohim would have us learn in terms of doctrine, the way of life, the way the congregation of Elohim, the congregation of Yud-Heh-Vav, the congregation of the eternal, the way it should function, we've covered most of that already. And the remaining chapters, we're going over chapter 25 today from verses 12 to 27, but the remaining chapters up to chapter 28 are the closing events centered around Paul, the fulfillment of that word which Yeshua said how he would preach fully the word to the Gentiles. And actually to all who would come to him. So the doctrine aspect, how the congregation should be, and all of these we've covered. Now we're going to see the closing of the account of the works Yeshua is doing, specifically with the Apostle Paul. So, let's continue with chapter 25. So we have seen last Sabbath how Paul was, when he went to Jerusalem after many years serving the nations and doing a complete work. And as mentioned before, as we see in the writings that we should be even as he is. He sent us into the world. He sent his disciples, meaning the original apostles, in a certain way, the way he sent them, not the way they wanted to go, not the way they imagined they should be. He said, the way I sent them in the prayer, as we read in John chapter 17. So many times people rush, and I've seen this so much over the years of ministry and service to so many in different groups, in different locations, how sometimes there are individuals that are zealous in, and they allow their zeal to drive them ahead of what Messiah is teaching them. And when we rush ahead of Messiah and don't do it the way he said, we mess up. We create problems for ourselves and problems for others. But when we understand he is the head, he is the leader, we're following him, we don't go ahead, then we will accomplish the things even as he accomplished. For he is the Logos. As we've covered when we did Acts chapter 19, looking at verses 17 to 20, we saw how the Greek word logos, and which is Strong's 3056, is a term translated as word. The word logos is from the root word lego, 3004, with various shades of meaning for relating thought in words. It's relating thought in words systematically. Orderly, systematically, orderly. It's not doing anything that's chaotic or without a path. That's why Yeshua, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. So it's a orderly and systematic way. And we must make sure we function as one orderly and systematically as well as Yeshua. Otherwise, we're not functioning like Yeshua. We are to be like him. He is the Logos of Elohim, brought that which Elohim sent forth, and everything Elohim sent forth, sent his word to do, never comes back without accomplishing what the word was sent to do. We are to be the same. And this is how we evaluate our walk. You know, if we go forth to do things and it doesn't pan out and it fails, it creates chaos. We don't need people to tell us. We look at the word and say, no, this is error, because we are to be like Messiah, logos, orderly, systematic, which always accomplish what he was sent for. And so are we. And so was Paul. After so many years of service, spending special time with people, no matter how many times they contradicted him and opposed him, he did not return evil for evil, but rather patiently waited. There was a portion we read how he stayed with them for years, and this was just before heading back to Jerusalem, right? Remember how they besieged him and all the love that they had for each other. They couldn't let go of him. They waited at the bay until they could see him no more. That was the deep love they had for him. They cried with him. They, as they prayed together, and they remember the word that broke their heart, you will see my face no more. And they waited and watched that ship leave until they could see him. They didn't leave. They didn't depart from that area until they could see him no more. That's the deep love of Elohim in the hearts of the brethren. But it does not happen overnight. It does not happen by the acts of flesh and blood, by seeing with the eyes or the sensing of the senses. It does not happen like that. It happens by focusing on the object of love. The object of affection is foremost who? Elohim and his son and his spirit, not each other. For as it is written, our communication, our union is foremost with the Father and the Son, not with each other. That's where people make the error. They try to build a relationship first with each other. Then no, in the world, that's how the world functions.
And that's why the world, you can see them acting so much, very much at a workplace, you know, seemingly everything's fine. But then the next minute they're backbiting each other. Why? Because their relationship is not created as the relationship Elohim forges. The relationship of Elohim is foremost with him and his son and by through his spirit, then with us. So that means we put our hands to the plow first, do the work of Elohim, focus on honoring Elohim. And when we're together, we focus on Elohim, not let the enemy deceive us into thinking, oh, I wish I could do this. I wish we, no, no. Let's focus on Elohim. Let's focus on being purified by Elohim. Let's focus on putting our hands to the plow together to honor him, to honor him. And as we do that, because of our love for him, his love will go into us and unify us. Oh, may we remember that and not try to function like the world. What has kept us together all these times we've been together? Some of us have never seen each other. Could you imagine? It is the love for Elohim. How much more so when he allows us now to meet together, will we love each other? Let's stay within his cycle, even as the apostles did. Some have never seen Paul. Never. They read his letters and they were encouraged. They were strengthened. And some even spoke against him because they've never seen him. But eventually they got to see him, right? So let's be patient. Let's function like Paul. Paul did all his service that Yeshua sent him to do throughout the Gentile nations. Then when the time of Pentecost came, he came to Jerusalem to be, as he said, purified, bringing alms to his brethren. Then we notice he was attacked by the adversaries. But even though attacked verbally, without cause, a man that was, I mean, really significantly more set apart than those. There was no comparison between those who were accusing him. No comparison of the righteousness, of the motives. And yet they took him. They beat him. And he gave, and in response, what did he do? Humbly gave a loving response to them. And then he gave a response to the centurion, the Roman centurion, the Roman centurion of the fourth beast that Daniel saw that would come. That fourth beast that Elohim put in place in that time. Oh, yes. And so give an account to them. Then he gave an account to Festus. Then he gave an account to Felix. And now we're going to see he gives the account to Agrippa, which is where we continue in verse 12 of chapter 20:25. And in all of the accounts, he testifies of the work that Elohim has done through him, through Yeshua, through none other, through no preaching of man, but through the direct work of Yeshua in his life, and how he testified of the resurrection, which is the cause of the issues, and the resurrection in the name of Yeshua. For some had no issues, like the Pharisees had no issues with the resurrection, but there was that one stumbling block, that one stone upon whom, if any shall land, shall be cracked. If it shall fall on anyone, shall be grinded. That one, Yeshua, all of them, both Pharisee and Sadducee, had issues with. And so let's continue with with chapter 25-27. I'll read it quickly from verse, and then we will review it. Then Festus, that's verse 12 of chapter 25. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "You have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you shall appeal. I'm sorry, to Caesar you shall go." And after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a certain man left a prisoner by Felix, about whom the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me when I was in Jerusalem, asking for a judgment against him. To them I answered, it is not the custom of the Romans." Hold on, Brad. "It is not the custom." Let me read verse 16. "To them I answered, it is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. Therefore, when they had come together without any delay, the next day I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in. When the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I suppose."
I don't know for anybody else. I can't hear Jackson.
Hold on.
Jackson, you're just so you know, you're coming in and out. I don't know if it's true for everyone.
How is it now? Can you hear me?
Sounds good now to me, brother.
Thank you. Okay. So, thank you. We regret that technical difficulty. So let me continue with verse. Let me repeat what I said. So, to them I answered in verse 16 of 25, "It is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. Therefore, when they had come together without any delay, the next day I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in. When the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I supposed, but had some questions against him about their own religion or superstition and about one Yeshua who had died, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I was uncertain of such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved for the decision of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I could send him to Caesar." Then, verse 22, "Then Agrippa said to Festus, 'I also would like to hear the man myself.' 'Tomorrow,' he said, 'you shall hear him.' So the next day, when Agrippa and Bernice had come with great pomp and had entered the auditorium with the commanders and the prominent men of the city at Festus's command, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, quote, 'King Agrippa and all the men who are here present with you, present with us, you see this man about whom the whole assembly of the Yehudim petitioned me, both at Jerusalem and here, crying out that he was not fit to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I decided to send him. I have nothing certain to write to my sovereign concerning him. Therefore, I have brought him out before you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after the examination has taken place, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not to specify the charges against him." Amen. Let's go back to verses 12. So just before we go to verse 12, a new person is introduced. You know, the first person we saw, introduced was Felix. And we know his name was Antonius Felix.
not Felix, our host, as I kid, but Antonius Felix, and he was a Roman governor or procurator of over Judea. So he was established as a Roman governor over Judea through Claudius, and that was about AD 52 to AD 53 per historical records. Then we saw the next person was Porcius Festus, right? And he was also a ruler over that region. Okay. And that was around 55 to 60, AD. And now we're introduced to, Agrippa. And Agrippa was known as Marcus Julius Agrippa II, also known as Herod II. Okay. And he was appointed by Rome as king over Judea. Now, he was not that Herod that killed John and tried our Savior. No, that was Herod Herod the First. That's the one who had John executed and tried our Messiah, Yeshua. And we know prior to him, when Yeshua was just born, we had Herod the Great, who was the one who killed all the children. So there were even other Herods. So it could get confusing, but the goal is not to focus on all of the Herods, but I just wanted to give a little background as this particular Herod was known as Marcus Julius Agrippa II, also known as Herod the Second. He is the one who replaced the Herod who died of worms. And this is after Yeshua had ascended and early on the work of the apostles, right? So he came in with Queen Bernice. Now, Queen Bernice was his sister, was the sister of Agrippa. And she was the wife of another king, Chalcis, and that's a city in Greece. You could do a little bit digging up research on that yourself, but I just want to give a little back on it. So these two came in, King Agrippa with Queen Bernice, his sister. Now, King Agrippa and Queen Bernice came to Caesarea to greet Governor Festus. So that region, where Festus, was governor was Caesarea. But notice in that verse. So he came. He didn't come to really involve himself with Paul and all of that. He just came to greet, Festus, being that he is a monarch and with the queen with him. And they came and they were in town, in the town of Caesarea. And so they wanted to meet the governor there. But notice what the scripture says. It was after many days that Festus talked to King Agrippa about Paul. He waited many days. So that's, so, you know, I don't know what happened during those many days, but he took time, before he talked about these things. Kind of hints to us too. There is a certain level of wisdom about this. And we don't jump into things sometimes about matters, but we proceed with great care. So after many days, he declared Paul's case to King Agrippa, saying, "There's a man kept in prison by Festus," as we saw. Let me see. Am I correct? By Festus? Let's see. Verse. By Felix. I knew that didn't sound right because he's Festus. So yes, this man was kept prisoner by Felix, as we see in verse 14. He told them that the priest in Jerusalem and the elders wanted a judgment against him, per verse 15. And he explained how he told them, as we see in verse 16, that it is not Roman custom to deliver a man to death before the accused
can interface, can meet with the accusers face to face to make his defense against the accusations against him. That's verse 16. Now, Roman, now keep in mind, I keep stressing, Rome was that fourth beast that Elohim put in place. We have to remember, all governments are under Elohim. And the book of Daniel made that clear through the image of the huge statue of different metals, of four different metals, and the four beasts that were, that came about over time to do what? To rule over the world by the will of Elohim, not by the will of Satan or any demonic force. It's by the will of Elohim that Babylon was set in place and everything subsequent. Remember, through the work of Elohim, by the work of Elohim through Daniel, Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar declared through all the world, through Babylon, that it is the Elohim of that Daniel served that all should worship. That was the work of Elohim. And it continued throughout. And now in the fourth beast, or in the fourth metal part of the giant statue, which was what all of that represented in the book of Daniel, we're with that fourth beast, or the metal part of the statue. And it is that Roman part that is ruling, that intervene according to the will of Elohim to keep Paul safe through all of these horrible the injustice that was being inflicted upon him. We saw it was the Romans who intervened to administer justice in a level of fairness in this whole matter. And so we see it expressed here by Felix. It is not Roman custom to deliver a man to die before the accused can interface with the accusers to give defense against the accusations. This is in verse 16. We could see throughout the scriptures, Old and New Testament, how too often the law was being abused, was being mishandled by those that should have been blessed by it and used it to bless others, not to afflict others in trouble as they have done throughout. And even the accounts of Josephus and the accounts of others show how perverted, how corrupted the system had become. It's not just here in the scriptures. When you read Josephus, you see how much murder, how much insurrection, how much evil, how much the factions were warring against each other. You can understand what's going on here. So Elohim had the ones he appointed, the Romans, the fourth beast, to intervene. Let's see another point. And so Festus continued on sitting. Once he sat on the judgment seat, as we see in verse 17 to 19, he asked the man, that is Paul, to be brought forth. He listened to the accusers, and he realized as he's listening that their accusations revolve around what? Their religion or superstition. Their religion, not the faith, genuine faith of the scriptures, but their own. And we know the scriptures refer to that as their own custom, Talmudic or whatever it might be, what they, their ideas of the scriptures, their misapplication of the law. It resolved around their own views and against Yeshua, who is understood to have died, but Paul affirmed to be alive, as we see in verse 17, 19. That's what the accusations were. Their perspective, they're using their perverted use of the law to accuse and condemn an innocent man. But Festus noticed that. And so Festus was uncertain about, and he explained when he was uncertain about such matters, he asked Paul if he would go to Jerusalem and be tried in these matters. Yet Paul appealed to Caesar, and so was hell until I, that is Festus, could send him to Caesar, as we see in verse 20 to 21. Now, as we noted in the earlier portions of chapter 25, that Festus was influenced by staying with the accusers. At first, he had in mind totally not to send Paul to Jerusalem. But after spending just a short time with Paul's accusers, he wanted to do them a favor. That's actually what happened there. He wanted to do the Yehudim, his accusers, a favor and send Paul to Jerusalem so that Paul might be killed. If you remember that part early on in the chapter. So here he kind of glossed over it. So is man. Man is so, the natural man is so imperfect. So will always seem to justify him or herself in matters of judgment. See, he doesn't make it sound as if he was going to send Paul so that Paul might be killed, as he knew they would, but he just said, oh, you know, I was uncertain. And so I asked him, but there was more to it than that. There was more to it than that. Let's try to finish with that chapter. So it was at that point, after having heard Festus' account, that King Agrippa stated he wanted to schedule a meeting to hear Paul himself the next day, as we saw in verse 22. So in verses 23 to 24, we saw that King Agrippa and Queen Bernice, his sister, entered the auditorium or the judgment place with great pomp in company of the chief captains and prominent men of the city. Right? So they came. It wasn't a small thing. With great pomp mean, there was probably maybe trumpets. But remember, he's the appointed king over Judea by Rome. And so there was great pomp, lots of fanfare in the company of chief captains and the prominent men of the city. So, in a way, Elohim was allowing this to be made a big deal for everyone to know about. Because this was his servant Paul. This was no ordinary man. Okay? No one whom Elohim himself appoints is an ordinary person. No one. And this is why we must make great care as to how we portray ourselves, not to portray ourselves greater than we actually are. For this was Paul, a man who actually saw Yeshua, who actually heard Yeshua, who was actually commissioned specifically in an orderly fashion by Yeshua, a man who did great signs and miracles and wonders without fail in the name of Yeshua. He was not a man who missed here and missed there. He was not a man who did a work as if he was just beating the air, as he would say. He was a man who was sent in the likeness of his Savior, of his Master, so that everything he did by the discerning power and leadership of the Spirit of Yeshua, the Spirit of Elohim, without fail. This was the true servant of Elohim, as all the others whom Yeshua picked and says, I pray for them that you keep them in your name. Yet so many today would want to associate themselves with such great a work. But as it is written in the Psalm, Lo Hagalibi, I have not placed myself in things too high for me. I have not set my heart on things too high for me. But so many have appointed themselves erroneously as leaders and all of this and all of that and failed here and there. And some of us, even myself, have walked that line. But in the congregation of Elohim, it must not be. Otherwise, we may give ourselves any name we want. But we will not be honored by Yeshua. Yeshua, when he said, depart from me, for I have not known you, workers of iniquity. For there is no one who is of Elohim, who is commissioned by Elohim, by his divine son, who cannot be known by anyone unless he is revealed to them, that will go forth in the name of Yeshua and fail. No, it does not happen. It is those of the world who crept in so long ago from generation to generation past, who claim to be ministers, who claim to be pastors, who claim to be this and that, not having a humble heart, but wanting to make a name for themselves, rather a name for Elohim. And so they fail. Everything they did failed. But once we come to Yeshua, we could repent and say, Yeshua, I know the vine. The vine is not Israel. The vine is Yeshua. Is it not written, I am the vine and you are the branches, and I will connect myself by your spirit through Yeshua, and whatever he does, I will do according to his will. I will wait upon him and do his work and not magnify myself beyond measure. But I will be humble. I will be humble. All of us who are his servants will be humble. But Elohim glorified, made this huge, allowed this pomp. And then at the command of Governor Festus, Paul was commanded to be brought forth after all of this. And what did he say? Then Festus then informed Agrippa and all present that this man, this is the man, this is the man that all the many Yehudim in Jerusalem and here, Caesarea, wish to be killed. This is the man. Let's go. Yet finding nothing worthy of death in him, they found nothing. Examine him. Listen to all the accusation. They found nothing worthy in him of to die, as his accusers said. And also his appeal to Augustus Caesar. So feast, and he says, because of this, I brought Paul to them, to who? To all those gathered, to the chief captains and all present at that time, but especially to King Agrippa, so that through the consensus, through the discussion with King Agrippa, he, Festus, may have a reasonable written explanation of the crimes of Paul to be sent to Augustus Caesar, as stated in verse 25, verse 27. So the justice of Elohim is being worked through the ones he had set in place to rule the world at that time. And Paul was kept safe, and the power of the Spirit of Elohim worked in Paul to bring him thus far, just as the Logos was sent to fulfill everything that Elohim sent forth his Logos to do by the Spirit. So Paul, and so all his true apostles, go forth to do a work to fulfill what Yeshua has ordained. So we can judge ourselves, brethren, in our past walk. How have we done? How have we done? Oh, Jackson Souffrant, how have you done in your past walk? I have to judge myself and align myself with the work of the Logos of Elohim to make sure that everything I am doing is behind Yeshua, that I never go ahead of him, that I never make my own things up, that I never imagine anything. But I look carefully and patiently through the scriptures and do nothing until I know what the scriptures say, or until the Spirit reveals it and confirms it in throughout the scriptures. And I cannot be deceived and say, oh, the Spirit has shown me thus and thus. No, whatever the Spirit shows to his servant, his true servants is made manifest in the scriptures and can be proven through the scriptures. There is nothing the Spirit ever teaches a servant, a true servant, that will contradict what's already there. And that's how we judge all things, is what manner of spirit is this? Is it of Elohim or is it my own thoughts? And we could judge how we are to walk. And this is such a blessing for us, brethren, those of us that are seeking to do what is right. We can judge our walk. We can judge our direction to see what has happened with this work that I have done. Has it brought glory to Elohim or has it brought confusion? Did it pan out or did it collapse? That's how he lovingly tells us. And so that we, oh, this didn't work. I'm not going to do it this way anymore. Let me make sure that I do it the way Elohim does, so I could walk and be as one with all his true servants that have ever existed to this very day and will always exist, especially so that we can be like Yeshua. Like Yeshua wants us, like the Father says, for it is written, behold, what manner of love the Father has given unto us, that we should be children of Elohim, not children of our own imagination, not children of our former background, whatever it is. All that needs to be put to death. Even as Paul, he said, though he claimed to be a Yehudi of Yehudim, of the tribe of Benjamin, of the X, Y, and Z. He said, count all of that as nothing for the sake of Messiah, who is what? From above. Who is from above. And also, so that he said, through Messiah, he has made of both Jews and Israelites. No. He has taken Jews and he has taken Gentiles. He has brought them in Messiah and made what? One new man after Messiah. We're not to be like Jews or Israelites. We're to be like Messiah, the son of Elohim who is from above. Because we have the record of what the Jews were like and the Israelites were like. Why would we think we should be that? When there was nothing in of themselves righteous or good. Everything the Jews ever did, Israelites ever did, anything that was good was from the knowledge of Elohim. It was not a Hebraic mind that gave it to them. Their Hebraic mind gave them confusion. Their own, whatever they came up, gave them confusion. It was the spirit of Elohim through the prophets and the righteous judges here and there that gave them some form of stability and direction. There was nothing of their mindset. There was nothing of their flesh. There was nothing of their inheritance, physical inheritance, that helped them. The testimony of Elohim speaks against flesh and blood all throughout, of both Jews and Gentiles. And so, in the great knowledge and love and mercy of Elohim, he has taken both Jew and Gentile who have failed and united them to be one new person, not an Israelite or a Gentile. That's why there is neither Jew nor Greek in Messiah, but one, for we are to be made in the likeness of that which is above, so that we can be like the angels, as Messiah said. You will be like the angels. You will be equal to the angels in the resurrection. That's the mission. He did not create us to be after flesh and blood. He created us to be like his son. That's why his son came, so that we can know what we are to be like. Thank you, dear brethren. So next Sabbath, we will see what Agrippa will say to Paul. Thank you for listening.